and I am going to run the heaviest marathon ever, where we carry 100 kilos, 220 pounds, for 26.2 miles. Once we get to the 26.2 mile marker, the stone in its natural form is going to be cut down to a baby headstone, which is a lot lighter. It's around 60 to 70 pounds. Then that 60 or 70 pound stone is going to be strapped back to my back, and I am going to run 450 miles back to Nottingham. This stone is going to be epic. It's going to be, I think it's going to be a very difficult world record to break, but I needed to make like a pilgrimage. Like, I know that I needed to do this. So I just wanted to, you know, mock that moment in the right way. And if I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do that for my son, I'm going to do it in the most epic way possible. And it's carrying that freaking stone back from Scotland. Today's episode, as always, is sponsored by Huel, a quick, affordable, nutritionally complete source of food with everything that your body needs. I would have a bottle in my hand right now, but I left it back at my apartment, so I'm devastated. So if you want to find out more about Huel and not be like me, head to the link in the description where you can grab Huel and exclusive offers down below. Thank you to Huel for powering the podcast. Let's dive into the episode.
Okay, so I'm just going to start off with something I've found on your Instagram.
Yeah.
You talk about it a lot, but I don't know if you've done a podcast episode about it. I mean, it doesn't have to just be about this, but you said that you find serenity in painful places. Why do you like to be in painful places?
It's funny because I've been asking this question a lot recently. Why I find peace in painful places, and I think there's a few things for that. Because if I look before Jacob died, there was definitely moments where I would push beyond a lot of people would push, but not super. But after Jacob died, that became ridiculous. Like the levels that I'm willing to push myself physically and emotionally, but physically, are far beyond what I think other people are willing to push. And I think I put some of that down to the fact that stasis, like when something bad happens to you or something difficult happens to you, I think your stasis changes. So I was in pain a lot after that happened, and I was in pain for a long, long time. So being in pain kind of became normal. So I think my pain threshold changed very, very drastically after that. There is something to be said when you're burying something very painful inside of you, that reaching out for extreme physical discomfort or even touching that exact pain, the pain of losing somebody, is a relief. There is a relief to feeling pain and agony when you've buried it and suppressed it inside of you. And I know that sounds ridiculous, because you're burying it and suppressing it inside of you because you don't want to feel it. So then when you do something that is like a real physical endeavor or something that's really painful physically, you are controlling the pain. So when you're in control of the pain, even though it hurts, it doesn't hurt as much as the thing, and also controlled pain and delivering it to yourself in a way of doing a physical feat is much, much more palatable than it being delivered randomly. Like, you imagine a slap in the face, right? Let's take a slap in the face. This is an example. If I was to take my hand and slap myself really hard in the face versus I've got my best friend next to me, and I know he's going to slap me in the face, but it could happen anywhere between now and the next 5 years. What's more painful? Taking my hand and slapping myself as hard as I possibly could in the face, or waiting every single day with my friend sat beside me, not knowing if he's going to hit me in the face? And that's, I think, a good analogy, actually, for when you've lost somebody and you've suppressed it, or you've lost somebody and grief comes like that, like a sledgehammer to the head. You don't know when it's coming, and it can hit you at the most random of times. So for me, when I would go out there and I would put my body under extreme pressure, or I do it still to this day, or I cry because I've seen something that's made me emotional and I'm in control, that is much better than being out of control and waiting for grief to hit me. It's so merciless. Anyone experiencing grief or a loss knows how merciless it can be. So yeah, I think I reach for control. It's a long answer, I guess, to that.
If there's someone going through a similar situation to you or struggling with grief or loss of someone or just a really painful time, would you like recommend putting yourself through physical pain, like the gym?
No. Not what I do, no. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. I think if you're immediately going through it right now, just you're a vessel on a very rough ocean, and it is going to be rough, it's going to be difficult. And I think I would tell them that it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult, it's going to be really, really difficult. I wouldn't give any advice because I think everybody's journey is different. I would just sort of tell you how it's going to be. But beyond that, when you get to the, especially with very difficult traumas, beyond that, you need to find an outlet. I think our body's only capable of taking so much pain. And like some people look at me and go, oh, you dealt with the death of Jacob really well. And people say that about other people, but I didn't. I haven't dealt with it. I don't think anyone actually fully deals with something. You don't, there's no fix for something like that. It's just things happen. And like some of mine is because I've come to an understanding. I've learned how to deal with it. I've got coping mechanisms for it. And I've turned some of the bad stuff into the love for Jacob. And then some of it is compartmentalized in me. Like what I was talking with DJ Shipley, like some of it is boxed away, and sometimes I'll unpack it. But in the boxing away of things and compartmentalizing of things, I personally believe that you have to release that valve every so often. So you have to do something to process that. You can't just bury and stack all these things inside you. Something will happen. You won't be the human that you want to be. You'll be a different person. And usually that's an ugly person with lots of anger and horrible negative energy inside them. So you have to let this out. And that's where I say to people, my advice is maybe don't go do what I'm doing, but find some kind of physical outlet or relief for that valve. And another good one for that is talking about it, you know, saying that, yeah, I've kind of buried this thing inside of me. And, you know, today I'd like to talk to you a little bit about it and, you know, talk to a loved one or somebody you trust, but don't keep pushing it down. At some point it will grab you. And if it doesn't, I would say that you're not the person you're supposed to be. You are a different version of yourself because you are in survival mode still. And I say that to everybody who has told me that they're pushing something down and has an awareness of it. I tell them that it's good to relieve pressure on that every so often. So for me, I knew I had these things buried. I had them pushed down really far down. And I'm very, very physically aware that I do things to release that valve. And I can feel when it's getting too much pressure. So the physical feats are great. I've always done powerlifting. I've done very masochistic ways. I don't recommend it, but you can do healthy stuff like running and walking and think of that person or whatever it is whilst you're doing those things. And then also talking about it is massively powerful as well, yeah.
You kind of mentioned it there, but people might watch you now that have kind of followed you maybe since you lost Jacob or just over the years and seeing you, you're able to talk about it maybe a little bit better now. You seem like to have a, like ways of dealing with it. Is there anything that happened along the journey that like kind of helped you with that? Like, you kind of mentioned some, but you people might know about when you spoke with Erwin and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I've said this before, that speaking to Erwin McManus was one of the biggest lifts for me to change into, yeah, I can talk about this. I can come from a positive angle. It doesn't have to be that I'm hurt and it's hard and it's difficult and that I faced this adversity, because that's what it all was. It was always from this idea that I was, and I didn't want to ever say this, but that I was a victim and I was I was powerful because I'd overcome being a victim and I'd overcome the difficulty and the tragedy that I faced. And I had this hard, hard life that I had battled through, and that made me really, really strong. And that's why I can talk to you today. Like that's what it used to be. And I always felt there's something is wrong here. And then, so I wasn't actually able to authentically share. I never did. I struggled with it, one, because it didn't feel like I was being honest and truthful, but two, because it didn't feel right. It just never felt right. Spoke to Erwin. Erwin told me that, you know, the pain that you are feeling is not because you love them so much. And a lot of it is because I'm not willing to let go. And that changed everything. So then after that, I have slightly started sharing. I've done the charity. I started to work towards it. I'm still trying to find my voice with it. We spoke to DJ Shipley 2 days ago and to Jason as well. And both of them were talking about sharing their experiences. And like DJ was like, I passionately share what I think and feel and how I feel because I think it's got some power in it. I think there's some power in what my experience was. I think it can be helpful to people. And I think I'm going to passionately share as much as I possibly can and move towards it. But this is what I wanted to say is I do say a lot about Erwin McManus and that moment. And it was pivotal, but it was a moment and I would have found it somewhere else. Erwin is magic, by the way, but...
You did say someone had said that to you as well.
It had been said to me before. Was I ready to receive the message? Probably not. And this is the thing. You have to be willing to work on yourself one small step at a time. And that's what I had been doing for the last 8 years. There have been moments where I've buried it even more and I've worked less on it, but I have constantly worked towards getting to a position where I can help talk and speak about it. It's been 8 years. Like that's a long time. It feels short to me because like there's obviously the point of losing Jacob it sometimes feels like yesterday, but it feels somewhat short because the journey of trying to be better and better myself has taken a long time. So I think that's the thing is that you have to constantly be willing, if you want to help other people to better yourself. I am never, ever going to pretend like I know all the answers. I just know what works for me. But that's taken 8 years to figure out. And in 8 years' time from now, some of the lessons and the things that I talk about today might not as be relevant, and I will learn new things. But you have to be willing to completely better yourself every single day. I'm not going to pretend like I've got the answers, but I know what works for me, and I'm finding my voice in a confidence that is coming from the right place now. So that's why I'm willing to share and talk about it a lot more, I'd say.
Do you think sometimes subconsciously you're willing to share as well because maybe when the grief was so new for you, you would have wanted someone to... you would have wanted to hear what you're saying now, like someone's been through it, or like...
I know from my own experience that that's the only thing that helped at the start was mom. So I know you know this, but for context for the audience is that mom's first son, and we knew about this as kids, that our oldest brother, Jason, was a stillborn baby. And it wasn't fully explained to us, but I knew that my older brother had died. And I remember as a kid, it's like Scouts. I don't know what it's called. It's called Scouts. That is what it's called. And I was at Scouts and they were asking us to draw pictures of our family. And I drew a picture and I drew like another picture, like to the right, and there's a little angel. And the person asked me, says, oh, who's that one? And I said, oh, that's my brother, Jason. He died. And, you know, and I told mom about it, and I could tell like she was really happy that I'd drawn that picture with Jason in there as well. But then you grow up as a kid and I didn't really realize, you know, you get older. I knew that it affected my mom, and the death of Jason had been very, very difficult for my mom, but I never got to learn who Jason was or know who Jason was because he wasn't here. He was a stillborn baby. So beyond understanding that, I didn't really know that as a kid. But then when Jacob died, it like, obviously I knew, but it all came back to me. And just a quick kind of story of that is after Jacob died, I was in a hospital room and I was left by myself in this hospital room. Jacob had just been delivered And I was in this hospital room where they deliver babies. He'd just been delivered. And then I was by myself. And there was a hospital room beside me. They're like adjoined by these doors. And it was pitch black in the room that I was in. And under, I remember it so vividly, under the door next to me was another family giving birth. And there was a sliver of light coming through. And I remember the sliver of light because it was the only light in the whole room and it was hitting my leg. And I could see like, you know, shadows moving and this sliver of light. And I was sat there by myself and it was, you know, there was a bit of noise, but it was kind of silent. And then all of a sudden I heard this massive cheer in the room and then a baby cried and then they just delivered their baby. And I was sat there and, I was sat there and feeling shit, feeling very shit. And then, I don't know why I told this story because I know it's an emotional one. And then my mum came through the door instantly. Sorry, I shouldn't have told this story. And, you know, when anyone's mum comes through the door, when you're struggling or it's a difficult time, it's a good feeling. But because mum knew, she didn't have to say anything. Like she didn't have to say anything. She knew exactly what I was experiencing. She knew, she turned the lights on. She came, sat beside me. She hugged me. She knew exactly what to say. I felt safe. I felt it was difficult. It was really hard, like facing it all. And you know, nothing prepares you for the pain of that and the whole period, but just something about having my mum there was like, I don't know, I can't explain it. She was, she was a, it's funny because I joked about this. I always say my mum's a saint, but I always used to say that before this, but she was like a saint. Like she was like an angel or something. I can't explain. She lit up the whole fucking hospital for me. And so having her throughout the whole process, I'm not saying it wasn't difficult. Like there was moments where I felt completely alone and like in the dark. And, you know, I spent months in bed crying and wanting to, you know, get out of here. And but in that moment, if I hadn't have had her, that might have been a really tough moment to eventually try and overcome. Like I don't know if I would have climbed out of that hole. She kind of like lifted me out of it a little bit. And yeah, so there is a massive, massive part of understanding that not everybody has that. I mean, you know, so much pain my mum had to go through with Jason and the heartache and pain that she felt going through that. But, you know, all those things she learned and those experiences she had 20 years later, 25, 26 years later, was so valuable to me. Like, I don't know what I would have done. Like, it was so helpful. It took so much suffering away. So knowing that other people didn't have that today, yeah, makes me a massive advocate for trying to spread awareness. I'm almost guilty because I don't speak about it that much. And people tell me that you don't want to become the guy whose son died. Like, you don't want to... You don't just want to be one-dimensional with it. And I don't want to be one-dimensional with it. I want to show that I'm a person and a human, and, you know, I have loads of things going off in my head. There's loads of things that shaped who I am. But at the same time, I guess that's the voice I need to have, is to help those people as well. And try and stare away from this emotional story a little bit. You know, we're working with a charity for the future, but I'm going to help try and work with them now. Obviously, everyone knows I've got the Jacob Mulligan charity, and I'm trying to raise money for that. And if you want to find out more, there's a GoFundMe page down below. You can find out more about that. But there's a charity called SANDS, S-A-N-D-S, SANDS. And it's to help people suffering with stillbirth and baby loss. And there was a moment a few weeks after Jacob had died where I didn't feel any emotion. I was completely stiff and numb, and I couldn't laugh, I couldn't cry. And I can't explain this moment to you guys. I've said it before, but I felt nothing, nothing, nothing. I wasn't sad. It wasn't even like I was numb. It's like, almost like I knew that this thing had happened, but my body had put such a strong chokehold on me to do anything about it that I couldn't. I can't explain how helpless it was to try and feel emotion around my son dying. Like, it was ridiculous. So I was on Google searching for all the terminologies. Like, I was like, oh, dad who's lost a baby can't feel emotion, like everything. And there was not a single thing. I kid you not, like, I could not find any answers whatsoever. And maybe there is today, but there definitely wasn't there 8 years ago. Anyway, I went to this group, which is not like me. I went to this group, SANS, which is like, the way I describe it, it's like Alcohol Anonymous, but for people who have lost their babies. But it was like, that's a dark picture, but it's actually a really nice welcoming group. And we sat there in kind of in a room like this with loads of these fold out seats. And you go around and tell your story. And, you know, I was there. Some of these people had been going for years. And I said exactly how I felt, exactly what I was going through. And a man said, that's how I felt. And, you know, I've told this story a million times, but pretty much he said, that's how I felt. That happened to me. Don't worry about it. Eventually you will. And that day I drove back and I felt everything. All the pain came back and I started my grieving journey. So again, it was somebody who had experienced what I was going through that helped unlock it for me. And I think that's the thing, is human nature is to gather around the campfire and tell stories and share our experiences. And some people, I guess, think that's negative. Like, some people think that we shouldn't do that, and there's reasons we shouldn't do that. And I think social media kind of blurred the lines with that, because there's money involved and there's careers involved, and it's like, and there's hundreds of thousands of people. Like, I'm not speaking to like one or two people. There's 500,000 people that I could potentially speak to. And there's like, oh, be careful what you say. You know, don't share that. That's depressing for us to listen to. I don't want to hear about dead babies. That's taboo. If you're going to talk about that, I'm unfollowing. Like, whatever it is, has kind of shut it down, especially around baby loss. So that's been a difficult thing, I think. So now, like, if I can be that guy in that SANS meeting, or if I can be my mom in a, you know, in a way that she was to me, and say to some guy who's experiencing baby loss, or some mother that's experiencing baby loss, this is my experience and this is what I went through, and, you know, maybe you draw some connection with it, maybe you you know, helped a little bit, or maybe you're not, but I think that's there. I really do. And I'm a bit pissed off with myself that I've not been more active on there, and I've taken a lot of people's opinions in, to be honest, after thinking about mom is a, yeah. So that was massively helpful to me, and that's probably why, a large reason why I'm trying to do it more.
I don't think she would, but it would be good to get mom to speak on
that. I'd love to get mom on the podcast.
But then it's like, she probably didn't have anyone. I know her mom went through it.
Yeah.
I think it was as, like, spoken about, like, in the way that she could.
And mom suffered badly. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, more context is that my grandmother also experienced stillbirth, my mom's mom. But I think when my grandmother experienced it, you weren't allowed to see the baby. There wasn't the same processes. I don't think it was. It was very much, let's crack on with it. It's, you know, it's not a baby. Let's go on. So yeah, I think you're right. And I think mom, you know, my mom had a lot of struggles after Jacob, as after Jason, as anyone would. And it'd be lovely to get her on the podcast and share that experience, because she was everything to me when Jacob died. So, you know, she had, personally, she had this moment where she struggled so much, but then when she was there for me, she was so strong and she developed so much strength, and maybe it just took 26 years. Baby loss is just such a difficult thing, and stillbirth and baby loss is really hard, because you don't just lose your baby, which is very difficult. You know, you hold, you know, Jacob was, he was a beautiful baby. I got to hold him, but the differences, and again, I'll give you another story from that same SANS group. And you know, this is just what this person said to me, and it kind of shifted my perspective a little bit about stillbirth. And it's, I tell the story sometimes to friends and family, because I think it gives an idea a little bit of why stillbirth is a hard death to deal with. So I was talking through this group, and this man was sharing his story, and his baby was born with a heart defect. And the baby had lived for 2 weeks, and they'd spent 2 weeks with the baby. And, you know, over time, the heart defect was proven that they're not going to be able to do anything about it. And, you know, it came around to me, and he was beside me telling this story. He was sat beside me, and he told the story beautiful. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I'd already spoken about Jacob. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know how you dealt with that. Like, I can't believe, you know, that you'd, you know, seen your baby for 2 weeks, and how hard that must have been. And he turned around without hesitation and said, oh no, I think what you went through was much worse, because my son's eyes were these, you know, the most beautiful blue eyes, and I got to spend 2 weeks with him. And I don't know how you guys cope, but, you know, it must be so difficult not being able to spend time. And I think that's the thing about stillbirth that I'm trying to explain to people. And it's hard to explain it to people, because it's losing anyone is obviously very difficult. But stillbirth is, you lose all the time you were supposed to spend with that person. Every single second's gone. And that's difficult. That's hard. And that's why I think stillbirth mentally and emotionally affects in different ways, and it needs different people to speak about it, and different ways of dealing with it.
I never knew the story that you drew Jason in the cloud.
Yeah.
His mom, that must have been so special, because, like, as a kid, I never spoke about Jason ever.
I wonder if she remembers, yeah.
Like, and that must have been quite painful for her, because, like, no one's really speaking about it.
I tell you, yeah, I tell, what was really good about what Mum spoke about is she did, to me anyway, I don't know if she did to you guys, but, and maybe because you're younger, you didn't hear it as much, but she spoke about Jason to me quite a bit. Yeah, Mum used to speak about Jason quite a bit. We never went up to the grave as kids, from what I remember. We probably did, but there's nothing that stood out. But I do remember her talking about Jason, definitely to me and Joe. Yeah.
Like, she probably was quite alone with it for a long time. There's
Lots
of things in that, like the headstone and stuff. And,
yeah.
But yeah, I just didn't realize she did that picture. That's really.
Yeah, cool. I remember that so vividly. Again, is like, that's a really strong childhood memory that I remember. I drew Jason and with little angel wings. Yeah, I remember it very vividly. And it's funny because today, Jude draws Jacob in his pictures. So, like, Jude will draw, you know, every so often he'll draw pictures with Jacob in it when he's drawing the family. And it does mean a lot. I think, you know, this episode's going to turn into to stillbirth and baby loss, and I hope people don't mind that. We didn't really have a plan for the episode. We just wanted to get talking on camera. But I remember after Jacob died, there's a moment of around stillborn, there's a thing about being a parent. You know, Jacob was my first son. So to lose him, I also felt that I'd lost fatherhood or being a dad. And I felt that I wasn't a dad, wasn't a father. And that was very difficult to get around, because all I wanted to be was a great dad. That was, you know, I wanted to be a great dad to Jacob, and all the things that I was going to teach him and all these kind of things like kind of fell by the wayside. And there was a very, very active thought on that I wasn't a dad anymore. And some people said stuff like that felt insensitive at times. Like, oh, don't worry, you have another kid. Like, you know, don't worry, there'll be, you know, you definitely have another child. Don't worry about it. But to me, I started to really make a conscious effort that I was still a dad because I'd had a son, which made me a father. So to do that, I was very, very persistent with mentioning Jacob's name. So in conversation, I would say it. And I remember it's so difficult. This is why I think the taboo needs to be lifted on it, because it was so difficult. Because whenever I would mention Jacob, the air was sucked out of the room. Like, it was like, oh my God, he's talking about Jacob. And it really turned me off from saying it. Like, it really, you know, put me into a position where it's like, oh, I know you don't like talking about it. I know you don't. You, if I bring it up, you try and divert the conversation, or you don't want to talk about it. Like, if, you know, if I bumped into people, I mean, this is a difficult one, but if I bumped into people and someone says, how many kids have you got? I'm like, oh, I had a son, but he passed away. If you want to kill a mood, like, that's the fastest way to do it. So, like, I used to, at the time after Jacob had died, there was a moment where I was still working laboring jobs. I had the gym, and we're just about to start Mulligan Brothers. And on laboring jobs, the customers wanted to talk to you. You know, they want to talk to you and ask you questions and stuff. They've got kids, you know, whatever, grandkids. So they'd always ask those questions. And at the start, I was like, I'd always say. But eventually, the reaction started to beat me down, and I stopped talking about him. And that was sad. But like, now today, you know, like, I'll just say his name very, very clearly. So yeah.
Beautiful though, because it should be like, you should be able to just talk about
it. It should be normal, like, yeah.
Before you said that, like, I think you've been so good at like making sure his name is brought up around you like all the time.
All the time, yeah.
Like, tiny to now, like, he always would visit Jacob, still visits him now. Like, he's such a, like, I think that's really special because, like, Jude, that's Jude's brother. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think it's important to, that you've done that for him as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably the point I was making with Mum, was that's the lesson she taught me, I guess, with Jason. And I think, yeah, that's where I think the suppressing it and digging it, like, really pushing it down, that's where the issues are created. Because if I didn't mention Jacob's name and I pretended like he didn't exist, that will catch me at some point, 100%. You know, you might see, I often get things like this that still trigger emotion, but you might see a kid the same age as what your son would be, with curly hair, like, you know, like Jacob would have had, really tall, lanky kid, exactly what I would expect Jacob to look like a lankier version of Jude. And I'd see him and I'd feel devastated, and it'd really catch me. You can't suppress that. You can't, there's a moment in your subconscious that will direct your thought to it and go, that's what he would look like. And then boom, you know, if you've buried that, it'll explode. And it'll explode and spill out in your life in loads of different places. But because I talk about him, I'm open about it, it's like, you will rarely catch me crying and upset about Jacob. Like, it's not, it does happen. I'm not denying it does happen. Disney's great way of doing it, a Disney film. It's usually the situations around it. Like, you know, I'm getting upset about telling the mum story, because I've not told that story, I don't think, or I maybe told a handful of people, but also I'm realizing how much her journey, you know, helped me in such a, you know, difficulties that she faced, in the full circle that mum had. I'm just having that realization. That's why I'm getting emotional. I don't tend to get upset about the idea of Jacob passing. Like, that's not what it is. And I think a lot of that is because I'm open. I talk about it. I love my son so much. I'm so sad that he's not here, but I know that that's the way it is. And I think that, you know, we spoke about, this is Irwin right here, is if my feelings of love towards Jacob is used as the energy, that'll be a lot more powerful. And I just don't, I think the pain comes in is I don't want other people to feel what I felt at times, you know, lost, feeling lost. And if we can take people feeling lost and feeling like there's no answers, then that would be a win. And I think, I guess we're doing this episode, so there'll be some clips, I guess, of this as well. Today's episode was sponsored by Huel, a quick, affordable, nutritionally complete source of food that has everything that your body needs. And for me, I've been using it for the past 2 years to stay fit and healthy and make sure that I'm getting everything I need whilst I'm on shoot and directing and I'm producing these videos, knowing that I can reach in my bag and have a bottle of Huel and it can be a great meal with everything, including my protein, is an absolute game changer. So if you want to find out more about Huel or get exclusive offers, head to the link in the description down below. Let's dive back into the episode.
Some people might know already, but if they don't, you are actually raising money currently, aren't you? They're trying to do it.
Passionately. So I'm saying that and my knees feel like they might be broken. So I'm hoping that I can hang on until training's finished. And I just got a text from my brother, Daniel Mulligan, if no one knows. Daniel Mulligan is the kind of genius coach behind the Mulligan brothers. And he does a lot of our training. And at the moment, we're pushing my body to its limits to do the heaviest marathon ever, where we carry 100 kilos, 220 pounds for 26.2 miles. It's a massive stone that I've got in Scotland that I found, and I'm going to be carrying that 26.2 miles. The reason I'm carrying it 26.2 miles and doing the world's heaviest marathon is, one, to draw massive attention to what I'm doing. But two, once we get to the 26.2 mile marker, the stone in its natural form is going to be cut down to a baby headstone, which is a lot lighter. It's around 60 to 70 pounds. Then that 60 or 70 pound stone is going to be strapped back to my back. And I am going to run 450 miles back to Nottingham over the space of 10 days, which is just over an ultra marathon per day, which will be the world's heaviest ultra marathon over 450 miles, I believe. Why am I doing this? The reason I'm doing it is to raise money for bereaved parents to get headstones for their babies. If you go to a baby cemetery, especially Jacob's baby cemetery, 50% of the graves don't have headstones. And I think there's a few different reasons for that. And we can talk through them in another video. But one of the upsetting things about it is these funeral providers have a more profit margins and mark the stones up more on baby headstones, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life, that they make more money and profit more out of parents who have lost their babies. So I'm here to make a loud message about that. I'm here to raise money for bereaved parents so they've got an option, so they don't have to rely on these people. I want to go into the manufacturing of stones eventually, so we can give them away for free and run the charity that way. And then also, I want to start a campaign to get the government to include it in their budget for bereaved parents and people who have lost their children. They already provide £2,000, I think, £1,000 to £2,000 grant. It's a grant that you can receive, and it helps fund anyone who's lost a child, which is fantastic. You know, that's how it should be. You know, any parent who's lost a child, of course, as a community of Great Britain, we come together and we help support them. But the headstone not being included means that the funeral homes have a great opportunity to try and sell you something really expensive. In fact, the whole thing, the grant, the funeral homes, from my experience, what I remember is they try and upsell loads and loads of things. I just didn't have the money to do it, so they couldn't upsell me anything because I literally didn't have a penny. Because as a parent, you know, your money is directed towards looking after that child. It's in cots and cribs and, you know, the baby room and nappies and clothes and all these things that we'd bought to have a baby, that when the funeral came around, there wasn't any, the money was to, there was some money obviously to keep a child. But apart from that, like, there's no lump sum money to pay for a funeral home, and you're in no position to do so anyway. You're just emotionally fucked. But yeah, so that's what we're doing. And you can win. Brass Monkey, the best company, one of my favorite companies in the whole goddamn world, they're amazing, have donated one of their really expensive ice baths. It's £24,000, you know, it's massive. The best ice bath in the world, brand new. I'm using the exact ice bath that we're gonna be raffling away for the training process. So, you know, in a few months' time when we do the final count, all the donations on the GoFundMe, or anyone who's donated in person as well, every £5 donation, as long as I've got your name next to it, every £5 donation will be a raffle to win the ice bath. So make sure that you leave your details if you're doing it. You can still anonymously donate, or you can still donate, but every £5 donation will go to a raffle and you can win the £25,000 ice bath. We'll set a goal of £25,000 to raise. And yeah, it can have massive impact. I think with £25,000, the goal is to get some headstones for bereaved parents. We've got a wonderful headstone company that's agreed to do everything at cost price, so we can get that done. And then also, on the side of that, there is also a goal to manufacture, buy the raw materials, manufacture, sandblast a very simple basic headstone, so at least there's an option, and do them en masse for people with volunteers. I'm contacting some businesses locally in Nottingham to help with that as well. So sorry, that's a bit of a pause on this video, but that is the goal of everything that we're doing at the moment. And if people want to support that, the GoFundMe page is like the best place to go to do that.
Do you remember why, like, at the moment you decided to do that? Like,
the stone?
Really crazy thing.
Yeah, well, I had planned to do something crazy for raising awareness for Jacob for a long time. I tried to do the stone lift world record, the Atlas Stone World Record, and got beat by Trey Mitchell. So that was kind of the first time I wanted to do something. So I felt, obviously, you know, at the end of that, you remember the documentary, I'm sat on the bed and I say, I need to make this right or something. I can't remember what it was. I need to make it right. But I've been thinking of things to make it right. I've always started to move towards, I've been wanting to move towards endurance and ultra endurance running, 100 mile runs and all that kind of stuff, just because I'm naturally good at that kind of thing. And I like the idea of running hundreds of miles, but I didn't think it was hard enough. So I wanted to do something crazy. And then by chance, we were in Scotland. I drove past in Invergordon and I'd seen a stone on the beach. And it looked like a headstone. Yeah. So parked the car up, jumped down there, and there it was, this big lump of granodiorite stone. It's actually what they used to make headstones out of, turns out. And it was just this massive lump, and it just weighed, there was like a 8-foot wall, I had to get it, climb over it with a stone. And as soon as I saw it, I knew I had to carry that stone back to Nottingham. I wasn't gonna drive it back. I knew that, I don't know what it was, instinctively, the first moment I picked it up off the floor, I was like, I am carrying this back to Nottingham with my feet.
Well, you decided to, because you could have put it in the car and drove home.
We could have done it, yeah. But I knew, like, I think there's something about, I needed an outlet. You know, I was talking about an outlet. And the day after Jacob died, the very, very day after, I'm on about one day after, I remember this so vividly. I was in the hospital with the doctor. She says, how are you feeling? I says, feeling really good, yeah. And she's like, okay, what's your plans like? Are you going to chill out? What are you going to do? I want to run 100 miles. And she was like, what? I was like, yeah, I want to run like hundreds of miles and raise loads of awareness for this. And she was like, just take your time. Like, just slow down a little bit. It's like, you, after this happens, you're gonna want to do something. It's like a lot of people go through that process of grief or cancer, or, you know, when they're facing difficulties like this, they want to go and help other people. Just focus on yourself. But for 8 years, I knew I wanted to do something. So, and we're not even scratching the surface. Like, this stone is gonna be epic. It's gonna be, I think it's gonna be a very difficult world record to break. And it's going to be some journey. I don't even know if it's possible, but we're not even scratching the surface of what I'm going to do. But I needed to make like a pilgrimage. Like, I know that I needed to do this. When we spoke to Erwin McManus, he said about you need to find your space that's not his grave, because he's not there anymore. And that has helped me a lot. I visited his grave less, but I needed to just make sure that I say my final goodbye to Jacob, I think. And if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to, I'm not saying a final goodbye to him. He's always here. He's around me. But that's what I realized. He is around me. He's not at the grave. So I just wanted to, you know, mock that moment in the right way. And if I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do that for my son, I'm going to do it in the most epic way possible. And it's carrying that freaking stone back from Scotland.
And some people have said that it's not, you can't do it, right?
I would say, and this is not an exaggeration, 90% of the people I've said have told me it's not possible. The 10% of the people who have said it's possible are saying it's possible to you, Jordan. Like, they know who I am. They know that I will not stop. I think the general population would say, I'd say 99% would say it's not possible physically.
In your training, at the beginning, you felt like, holy shit, like, I don't know, is that
actually... The first week, I thought, actually, it might not be possible. I still feel that way after most of the heavy sessions. I think it might not be possible. I mean, right now, I don't know, something's going on with my knee where I think I've not got much cartilage left or something. It's very grindy in there, and walking up the stairs has been very painful this week. But there's a glimmer of possibility, and that's enough. That's all I need. I've proven, I think I've already broken multiple world records in the training. Like, we've carried that 100 kilo stone for over 9 miles. We've ran a sub 2 hour marathon with 70 pounds on my back now. Like, I think that's getting up there to being world record level. So we are really kicking butt right now. But it was the fact that there has been so much concern and so many people saying it's impossible that I just want it even more. And I think the funny thing about it is that, how did you come to the conclusion of 26.2 miles with 100 kilos? And how did you come to the conclusion of 450 miles with the 70 pounds? And it's just because that's the distance that where I found the stone, and that's how long it will take. Now, I wish I'd found the stone closer. That would have been much more easier to do. I wish that I was just doing 26.2 miles in one go. That would have been great too, because it's still been the world's heaviest marathon. It's probably the only bit people are going to remember. But at the same time, oh man, if I get to the end of that, that's going to be, I'll be proud of myself.
I think it's more special that it is starting where it's starting, because Scotland's been a huge part of your training for, so Luke Stoltman's backyard.
It's literally, I mean, we are literally carrying out of Luke Stoltman's backyard, out of Luke Stoltman's backyard.
Huge.
Yeah, Luke's been, I would say, in fact, it's the fact that I told Luke I was going to do it. He was the first person who said it's possible to me. So there you go. He was like, of course it's possible. And Luke over the last 3 years has been my guy. Like, he's been the guy I can go to and speak to about struggling. Like, you think about how big and strong Luke is. Like, imagine having someone you can message and or just ring up and go, hey mate, I'm really struggling with something right now. And you go, right, tell me. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know if I can tell you. Like, blah, blah, blah. You can tell me anything. Like, no f-ing judgment, you can tell me anything. And I tell him, and he's like, bloody hell, Jordan, like, you don't need to worry about that. Like, I've done this, I've done that. I can help. Like, you're a lot stronger than you think. You know, just whatever it is, even just listening to me, or going to the house and, you know, him taking us out to the sea. And yeah, so it's very special. And it means I've got an affinity with Scotland anyway. Like, Scotland has always been a magical land to me. Like, our family grew up in Scotland. You know, I've mentioned my dad, a few times, and he was an absent father. But even though he was an absent father, the Scottish roots was very much, you know, sold to us for our childhood. Like, I walked around most summers with a Scottish flag painted on my face, and any event I'd have a kilt on or whatnot. You know, it was very much follows Scottish traditions. Make sure you get the haggis and the black pudding in for your dinner and all that kind of good stuff. So yeah, it feels like the right pilgrimage to make from the Scottish Highlands to Nottingham. And I think the stone, from its natural resting place in the Scottish Highlands to my son is that's some magic right there, like carrying on my back. I don't think there's nothing ever been done like that in the history of man, I don't think. Like carrying, I mean, obviously the stone gets cut down, but it's just special to me. It is special to me. It's bigger than, you know, if this was back in the day, a long time ago, like someone carrying one of those stones for 26.2 miles, 100-pound stones in less than a day, like that's, for their son's headstone, it's a special story. And I know, like, I don't mean that in an egotistical way. It's like, that's why I want my son to have a special story. Like, once I'm gone as well, you know, maybe Jude, you know, speaks to his grandkids and he's like, you know, my dad, he carried a stone for my brother Jacob from Scotland and it was 220 pounds and he carried it for a marathon and then he ran it 450 miles after it'd been caught. Like, that's a freaking special moment, and hopefully it raises money for the cause and raises awareness. So yeah, it's just an exciting big goal. It's probably too lofty, but we'll give it a go.
I guess to wrap up on, where can people donate and help
support? So if people want to help, you can go to the GoFundMe and donate. Now, if every donation, you can donate anonymously, you can donate with your name. If you donate with your name, you do get an entry into winning the ice bath. It would be, there's going to be terms and conditions on that need updating, but it would be the ice bath that's delivered to you. We could donate it to somebody else. If you don't want the ice bath and you're like, nah, I'm good, I just wanted to donate and my name was down there, I'm sorry, I don't want the ice bath, I'm happy to give the ice bath to somebody that you love, or an institution or physical therapy place. Maybe you want to donate the ice bath itself. It's the best ice bath in the world. I'm not, that's not a joke. Like, it really is the best ice bath in the world. So yeah, that's one way of helping. I'm aware that not everybody has £5 to give. So if you could please, if you would share it on your social media pages, if you ever see me talking about the run, share the clips, interact with it. Like, the biggest thing about all of this, if I can get this to go viral and like people are looking at it and, you know, talking about the idea that this guy's going to do the world's heaviest marathon, the ultra marathon, then we would get enough attention that we could get loads of donations in. And that's the most important thing for me. So yeah, the page is down there. The GoFundMe link is down there. It's not an exclusive giveaway. You can just donate on there as well. If you do get contacted in the future about the fact that you've won an ice bath, you can just tell me to give it to the next person or I can donate. But basically, there's a donation link down below. There's just a little benefit if you do it. So that's what you can do. You can go on Instagram, interact with the post, share the post, share them on your story, whatever it is, let me know. And then also, lastly, we are in the training process. We're in the UK. And we're trying to put a dream team together to make this possible for me. So there's certain things that I'm trying to get. I'm looking for a physiotherapist at the moment who will tag along for the journey, who can fix my knee, which is currently really swollen, and like, you know, tape me up and just keep me moving no matter what it takes. You know, I've said this to everybody, I'll do this until the wheels fall off. And I'm hoping that somebody can just put the wheel on a little bit whilst we're doing it. We're also looking for logistics of like a camper van and sponsorships for hotels or whatever it is to try and make this work along the way. Logistically, it's a bit of a nightmare, but with the right sponsors and companies being involved, it'll be super helpful. We already have Brass Monkey on board. Hewlett obviously providing everything for the nutrition side. So I've got all my food, all my fuel is going to be there. And then also we want to get as many guest speakers on the run as well. So whilst we're running down, I want people to run with me. We'll do full episodes. So yeah, sorry, that's a lot, guys. It's a very, very important thing to me. And a lot has gone into it so far. I'm really just hoping my body can hold on and we can get to the start line and at least give this thing a go. And I'll give it my all then. So yeah, thank you for the support. You know, there's already, I mean, we were running through Nottingham the other day and somebody, one woman gave us £10, one gave us £20. I didn't tell her, they were like, what are you doing? I've got some money for you. I was like, you don't even know what we're doing. And she was like, well, what are you doing? I was like, trying to raise it. Oh, she was like, well, you can definitely have it now then. But like, you know, it's capturing people already. And yeah, thank you so much for that. Yeah, I guess.
It's been, that was
a cool episode. Wow. Thanks for watching. Have a blessed and productive day, and I'll see you in the next one. Peace.